Kent Sagendorf.
I'm Edgar Papke, and welcome to the True Alignment podcast.
We're coming live from the True Alignment office in the Anderson College of Business and Computing at Regis University here in Denver, Colorado. And Cynthia, where are you?
I'm in, they call it Denver, but I'm actually in the mountains about 50 minutes outside of Denver.
Okay, because when I saw that time zone thing, I was trying to figure that out based on your telephone number, which is here.
It is here.
Well, welcome from 50 minutes outside of Denver.
Yeah. Thank you.
Welcome to the True Alignment podcast, where we talk about all things alignment in life, in business, in your work, at home, in your family, in self. And we've got a wonderful guest with us here today. All questions, thoughts, comments, by the way, as always, you can email us at, send us a note at info@truealignment.com. And as always, we'll respond as timely as we can. Got a wonderful guest with us today, Cynthia James, transformational specialist and an inspirational leader and teacher who helps people create greater meaning in their life and get more aligned in a spiritual and very inspirational way. You know, Renaissance man is an often used term. I think you're a bit of a Renaissance woman. Recording artist, singer, songwriter, several books to your credit, degree in studying spiritual philosophy from the University of Santa Monica, award-winning books, I should add, What Will Set You Free, Revealing Your Extraordinary Essence, and the book I Choose Me, The Art of Being a Phenomenally Successful Woman at Home and at Work. And an interesting background, as you can already tell. And we're just really pleased to have you on the podcast with us today. Thank you for joining us.
I'm very happy to be with you.
Cynthia, what a wonderful smile. We're privileged to seeing you on Zoom. And so, you know, as we read that bio and a little bit of your background, you personify that background, right? What was the degree of consciousness?
Oh, spiritual psychology.
Yeah, but what was the, you did a program at the Holmes Institute in something?
Oh, consciousness studies.
Mm-hmm. Consciousness studies. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love it. We could talk for hours right there, and I would just be happy to talk about that. Because Edgar, you know, our True Alignment work is this search. It really is this search for alignment. And we talk about that with organizations, and we end up spending a lot more time talking about it with the individuals in organizations, because there are two things going on simultaneously. And it sounds like your work is really trying to bring them together, because we see individuals struggling to find alignment and organizations struggling to find organizational alignment. And the real clue is when they find out that those two are not independent things, that it all works. So it sounds a little bit like it relates really closely to your work as well.
Well, yeah. And, you know, I don't do this in a pitch, but what I know is that you come to that alignment and understanding when you get that there's a spiritual energy that flows through everything and an interconnectivity. And when you can get the leader and the teams, the organization to get that, they start working together.
I was talking with a colleague of mine this morning in Regis University. I don't know how familiar you are with that, but it's a Jesuit university. Mm-hmm. And so there's this spirituality of the work that we do and what we strive to do with our students. And I had the wonderful privilege of going on pilgrimage last March, actually, because the group after me just returned. She was asking me for some feedback about my experience. And really, I just told her, the founder of the Jesuit faith is in the spiritual order of the Jesuits is St. Ignatius. And we got to go to a childhood home in Loyola, Spain. And we got to traverse the entirety of northern Spain and the different places where he had kind of major blocks of his spirituality challenged and found. And then into Barcelona, and then we jumped over to Rome, where he ended his life and managed the Jesuit order from the Vatican. And she was just asking me how that was, and I still have my notebook, because there was such an opportunity to be open to listen to the spirituality come as it needed to during that trip. So I so appreciate your words there.
Well, I love what you do. I take people on pilgrimages too, because one of the things I think is important is we can't be divided if we get to know each other. And by going to different cultures and learning their spiritual tracks and their history and ancestry, you know, all of a sudden you get, we all want the same things.
Yeah, at the core of it all, as mm-hmm. human beings, yeah, agreed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So let's play around with this a little bit if we can. So we're currently, at least it's perceived that we're currently in a state of a great polarization that's going on, right? And not just in this country. I was just listening before
everywhere.
It's a report from Haiti and everything that's going on there. And
oh my goodness!
Mm-hmm. Just a lot of violence and a lot of different factions, and that's in one place where people are always together. So, your thoughts? I know you take this approach around inquiry and introspection and integration. How can that? What are you thinking about? What's going on with the polarization and what people really need to be able to do, to so that the idea of course, getting to know each other is key.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You
know, which is always the case, right?
Right.
What as people getting to know each other, what do you see as being essential to creating the kind of relationships to overcome the kinds of polarization that we're seeing?
Well, I think that what we're looking at is extraordinary discontent and not knowing what to do with it. Mm-hmm. And so we can't get to inquiry because we're so busy pushing it out, blaming and projecting and doing all of that when we don't even understand that we're a part of the issue. And if we're in I'm going to call it divine discontent, and we're pushing and we're angry and we're fighting, then we can't get to what is it that I'm contributing? What is it that I want? And what is it that I desire to create? Mm-hmm. Right now, people are just in, I'm upset, and so I'm going to rebel. And then all that does is create division. And, you know, when we think about Gandhi and we think about Martin Luther King, they kept saying nonviolence is the thing. And what do you want? Because both of those men I just mentioned, you know, Mother Teresa too, they all had a vision. They understood the discontent, but they set out with, I'm going to say, planting seeds to get that vision realized, which is how Gandhi changed things, how they all changed things. And I think we're so busy fighting that we can't even get to our heart's desire.
Cynthia, do you think there's also, you know, as you mentioned, those wonderful historical figures, do you also think that at any time in history, we have the greatest number of people that are, they're at so far at the edge that they're giving up is the wrong word. That doesn't capture what I'm trying to say, but they start to disconnect in a way. Because I agree with everything you've said. And I think only exacerbated by the number of people that are saying, I'm not seen here, so I'm not going to bother. Right.
Right.
So the volume of the voices raises, because those were the people that were going to be loud anyway.
Right. Yeah, but you know what I think is, yeah, I'm not going to bother, and or I'm going to look for a savior, which is where you're seeing fascism and all this stuff happen all over the world, because if I can't do anything, maybe somebody can get me there. And if I have to fight and if I have to do things that maybe I thought I wouldn't do 10 years ago, but it's going to bring me peace, or it's going to allow me to be seen or heard, then I'm going to put all my eggs in that basket, even though there may be toxicity in that basket.
Yeah. I was thinking about the idea. We have conversations here and with folks all the time about what the key motivations are, and what we're all seeking is human beings. And so the discontent is when we find out it's out of reach, or it's such a struggle to get our needs met. So when you think about the discontent and you think about, you know, moving towards the coalitions and the toxicity within those, what do you see as being the main sources of that discontent?
We don't remember who they are. We don't remember that we're interconnected. We don't remember that we all want to be seen and heard and safe and cared for. We don't remember. We just look at things from a micro place, and it becomes eye-centric as opposed to the whole.
Yeah, don't you? In that case, then it's and I think this is probably a lot of your work is around creating that awareness. Would we not be able to, as human beings, be aware of that?
You know what? It's about survival. You know, I had a pretty traumatic childhood. And so I spent an enormous amount of the first part of my life in just really in survival. How do I do to take care of myself? You know, some of the choices, you know, I would go, don't ever do that. But it was all about, how do I feel safe within me? How do I take care of me? And so when you're in that survival place, you can't see outside of your own bubble. And you think that you're the most important thing, and things are going to be better if you're taken care of, if you're supported, if you're held. And so sometimes what that does is it takes you away from your values, what's really important to you. Survival is not why we're on the planet.
Yeah, well, you're throwing titles to this week's podcast in there every time. Survival is not why you're on the planet. Wow, there was another one that you put in there. Divine.
Discontent.
Discontent, which I think that's a really nice one. I'm trying to think. So, who do you get angry at? God, you know.
So Cynthia, I have so many questions, and you know, a little bit of storytelling and things like this. It was just this weekend I was walking the dog, and I had a little bit of an aha moment because I realized, you know, coming out of the State of the Union and the rebuttal of the State of the Union address, how there's we're not sharing the video, so
go right now. Wouldn't it be wonderful? Hey, let's drop a little clip in here right now. You know,
but the genius, now please insert the word evil here if you need to, but the genius of driving people back to that I, you know, as a way of driving that discontent.
Uh-huh.
Like there is genius there. And I think one side of our political party is understanding how to use and employ that tactic really to their advantage. Now, the other thing I want to put in play here is I was having this conversation. And so I come from a very, very low middle class, blue collar family. I'm the only one that left home.
In other words, he had a just a wonderful upbringing compared to yours and mine. And that's all he's getting at, same here, you know. Yeah.
I've shared some of this story with Edgar, but
he lived in the lap of luxury.
Yeah. As I talked to my family, one of the things we realize, and one of the things actually I'm a little bit frightened of, is I know that just below the surface, I have that survival thing too. And it can come out, like I know it's there. Sometimes I can use it as a tool when I need, or I perceive that I need an advantage. It frightens me though too, because I know it can come out like a lion roaring.
Yeah, so here's the thing. I really believe that what you were just talking about with political structures, there's been a strategy that didn't start last year or 5 years ago or 10 years ago. This is a strategy that's like, how do we get in power and how do we stay there? And then you start working it. You infiltrate systems and you create other things and you make people feel like they're in jeopardy. And when you do that, it's very difficult. If you haven't done a lot of work and you're not healthy and vital, you start believing that there's doom and gloom. And so that's why you're looking at all around the world, you know, these dictators are moving into power and they're all using the same playbook.
So Cynthia, a reaction question to that. So as we think about, you know, the business world, we have learned a little bit more patience for people that have a doom and gloom outlook, but only a very little more patience, right? I mean, this is kind of the mental health crisis, is that, you know, if you have doom and gloom, that's good. We feel for you. Let's hope it's over by tomorrow so that we can get back to work.
Oh yeah, because it's, yeah, we're sorry you're going through that, but there's a bottom line here. What are you bringing to it? And so the thing is, though, is like one of the things, because I work with some government agencies too, and this is what I tell people. I mean, because government agencies, there's a lot of stress, you know, but if you allow the stress to overtake you, then you cannot even imagine what's going on around you with the people around you, because if you can open and be authentic and even step into spaces of vulnerability, then what you get to see is you get to see, oh, wow, we're all in the same beautiful container called life. But if it's only here, then I'm going to do everything I can to protect myself.
Yeah, I'm just so fascinated by that balance between those two things. Edgar and I, we talk about the competitive advantage Nautilus, and this is really a fun conversation when we talk with business leaders about this, because we talk about the ability to listen with vulnerability as the root of trust, which is the root of your competitive advantage.
100%. 100%. And, you know, here's the thing. It's usually crisis that takes people into a place that opens that field of understanding, some kind of crisis. I mean, I'm just going to personally, you know, I've had two knee replacements and I've danced all over the world and climbed and done all this stuff. So my body said, okay, now we're going to just need something new. But, but what happened at the first one was I'm this independent person and I'm ambitious and I've got all these things. And all of a sudden, I couldn't move. I couldn't do for myself. I couldn't. And all of a sudden, I had to be in a space of 100% total receptivity. And I'm laying there one day and I'm like, oh, hello, that's what you teach. That there's a you can give and give and give, but there has to come a time when you receive, when you open and when you're vulnerable and when you let people see your vulnerability. And once you can do that, all of a sudden, okay, this isn't quite the business word that most people would use, but a loving energy comes in and you get to care for each other.
Yeah, we, in the work that we do with organizations, that's one of the perspectives in terms of key motivation that we have towards one another as human beings, and what we're motivated by is a desire and need. Is that caring? There's the connectivity and inclusion. There's the ability and desire to want to succeed at what we do and be good at what we do. But certainly when everything else fails, it's that caring that actually gets us through, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
Can I tell you all a story?
Please.
So I was working in probably the largest media management company in corporate communications, you know, a number of years ago. And 9/11 hit, and all of the executives in the US and in Europe were in New York. And so there was only me and one other executive in California, and we had two buildings. Everything went down, people were freaked out. So this man and I decided we were gonna take the boardrooms and we were gonna turn them into sanctuary spaces. So we lit candles and we just said, you can go in there anytime, anyway. And then we went to both buildings and gathered people, because some people had people that were in the towers, and we just were together. And then I asked everybody, no matter what religion they were, send me the names of places where people can go for spiritual connection. And so people were so grateful. And I became aware that it wasn't just happening in my little area here. People all over the world, all of a sudden, hearts opened and people wanted to care. And 2 days later, when the phones went back up, my boss called me and said, "What are you doing? We are not a spiritual organization, and we will have a conversation when I return." And I don't know, you know, I mean, I had kids and everything, so, you know, it wasn't like I was like wealthy. I said, "You know, I'm sorry, if we can't be open and caring at this point, what are we doing on the planet?" And then I hung up and I thought, "Oh God, I am so fired." and she came back, but she had gotten so many emails from gratitude that there was a caring space for them. And my desire on this planet is that we can start doing that without some kind of major crisis opening the space.
You know, this is so interesting because we have, thank you for sharing that story. We have societally very few stories, right? I mean, we always have the hero's journey as one of the one of the stories that we always tell. And it's always one of these, you need tragedy to guide learning. What would it look like, Cynthia, if we didn't have a tragic event to make us learn what should be natural knowledge?
And I'm thinking about this too. I'm thinking about it from the standpoint of that when I think about whether it's 9/11 or you know, some of the natural disasters that we've had, it seems like there's also the propensity to go into a combat mode. Uh-huh. Kind of like a severe storm hits the East Coast and the mayor of a town says, we're gonna win this battle against Mother Nature. Okay, right, somebody needs to get slapped up a little bit there and come on, let's wake it. Everything seems to be at the same time. So you've got this very generous, caring and humanistic response to crisis. And then on the other hand, we can also find ourselves in these combative modes. And it also seems in organizations that when things aren't working the way that they need to, very often, and I think this is probably the cause of a lot of unnecessary conflict in organizations, you know, the blame game is a combative posture that occurs. Exactly. It's not one that says, let's all sit down and figure it out and identify what the right problem is that we have to solve.
Right.
And I think you probably encounter that working with teams and groups as well, which is we need to pause here and have a real conversation to discover what the real truth is and create a shared understanding of that. And from there, what we can do is understand what the real problems are that need to be solved.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Say, what's your take on that?
Well, you know, here's the thing. We forget how fabulous we treat babies and animals.
Oh, I don't. My two.
I know you don't, but I'm saying, if we were as good to each other as we were to our dogs or our cats or the newborn babies if we were, you know, because you don't yell at the baby, you better stop crying because you're not supposed to cry here, or tell your dog, you know, don't go to that window and bark at that deer. I mean, you just love and compassion enters the space and leads. And if we could do that in organizations, oh, and by the way, in relationships, because we're watching the division and the polarization happen in families, and it's like, whoa, what? This is the same person you loved and it took you to all these places and did all these things, and now all of a sudden they don't count? You don't count? Because you've forgotten what it's like. I mean, my husband and I had COVID brain, and so we adopted two new baby labs. if that won't make you humble, you know, because you have to be in your loving, and you have to be in your patience, and you have to be in your kindness to support these babies that have no idea about your rules.
I think this probably speaks to the core of a lot of your work. Here's my take on it. So what is compassion? Right? The ability to care. It's loving, isn't it? And the idea of outwardly extending compassion in a way is moving towards the idea of unconditional love, mm-hmm. acceptance of one another.
Yeah.
And so self-compassion, to me, that mm-hmm. speaks of the idea of self-acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it not intended at all to strike a selfish chord, but rather it's self-love. How can I really be compassionate and accepting of others if I can't accept myself?
Yeah. And you know what happened to your truth?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think people are terrified. You know, you can see behind me, that's my latest book. It's called Does My Voice Matter?
Yeah.
And it talks about my journey to finding my voice. But the fact that if people could move into their authenticity and the truth of who they are, they wouldn't be afraid to speak their truth. They wouldn't be afraid to stand up for what they know is right. I mean, you know, you can't be in a group of people and have somebody over here, you know, discounting other people and keep your mouth shut and it's okay, because now you're feeding the issue.
Yeah. And that's at the, when you think about alignment, it's bringing myself into the world and mm-hmm. being aligned to that and how I do that. And through the things that I do and say and the actions that I take. And it's not just in moments, it's doing that all the time, which isn't easy, is it?
No, it takes courage.
Yeah, I'm reminded of a couple things, and I love the babies and animals, and I just have this image of your two labs. You know, Cynthia, the difference of babies and animals is there's no quid pro quo. It's not I'm loving you because I'm expecting. It's almost that I can assume that the baby and the lab will love me back. And you know, I think that's the, when you're too busy planning, I mean, this explains the bystander, you know, syndrome, right? I mean, the idea when you're too busy saying, I don't know if I should help because something else might happen, right? I might do something wrong. I mean, the minute you start having those conversations of the quid pro quo, what do I get from what I do? Then that transactional nature, right? We have this when we talk about coalition building and we're doing all of this stuff, is the freedom to let yourself out without the, and we often talk about, you know, when you're in alignment, when there's an absence of fear.
Yeah.
Speak up when you're not afraid of what would come back. You're almost putting the quid pro quo to the side because you're just there in that moment. You're in alignment in that moment.
Yeah, you know, I'm a woman of color. So what you're talking about were a couple of big mountains for me to climb to stop being afraid of punishment or retribution or whatever based on whichever thing people were looking at. And to get to the place that's like, who am I? What do I value? What's important to me? And being unmovable. That I'm going to stand in the truth of who I am. And if there is a law of circulation, then the more I can stand in who I am, the more the universe will meet me there. And that was a big lesson for me. It took a long time because of where I came from, what I had been through, how this culture looks at women sometimes, and how this culture looks at people of color sometimes. It was a big deal. But that fearless thing, I had to get to the point where I was willing to be me no matter what.
This is the every week on the podcast. You know, it started out as a little bit of a joke, and now we leaned into it a little bit. But we have a movie reference we bring in each week to kind of, you know, represent where our conversation has gone. And, you know, when we started talking about the divine, there were some easy ones I was grasping at, the Almighty films, Evan Almighty. And it was, you know, as you were talking about that tragedy that comes, that one started to make some sense to me. But you know, the one
he went straight to Mel Brooks.
The one that's coming to my mind is The Upside, Kevin Hart and
I'm seeing he's in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, I can't all of a sudden it'll It'll come back to me, his name. But oh my gosh, wasn't that amazing?
But you saw two people, right? I mean, you saw one break down the barriers and say, it is not somebody else's fault for this situation. Right. And you saw one person kind of say, here's who I am. And your last point about that the universe will come to meet me, right? Because you remember he made like a Banksy style painting, right? And all of the snobbery in that rich community, you know, talked about how ridiculous it was until somebody said, you know, I'll pay $400,000 for that. And then all of a sudden it had respect. But you had somebody that was purely themselves coming to the situation, not looking for anything in return, but saying, here I am.
Yes.
And really, you know, so many movies have the quote unquote underdog teaching everybody else how to be in the world. And that was one of them for sure.
I think this is a thread throughout our conversation at this point, is that when you think about different forms of reciprocity, and am I getting what I want from you and you getting what you need from me, at the end of the day, really, it comes down to that place of, I need you to be authentic and be truthful with me. And to be vulnerable and listening to me and showing me that. And I think it's an important piece of it, because we so often in most relationships, just about every relationship that we're in, there are always going to be different forms of reciprocity. And I think that blame game and the pointing the finger at each other when we're not getting a need met is so easy and so convenient, as opposed to having a sense of responsibility to ourselves, to how it is that I get that need met. And if it is in some way through our relationship, which of course it is, how we listen to one another, and how it is that we care and love for one another, how we help each other get things from life that we're seeking. At the end of the day, to be able to, we say it, to always work at bringing the unspoken expectation into the spoken realm.
Yes. You know, it's really interesting. Say it again.
To bring the depth and meaning of those expectations and to bring those into the spoken realm becomes so critical to the quality of the relationship. And how often, I don't know if blaming or pointing the finger at somebody has the same, I don't think it does. I don't think it has the same effect as making an ask or having a real conversation about what we're seeking out of a relationship that we're not getting.
Yeah, so let me add a little something to that. When you thoughts become things, right? So when you are blaming or shaming, what I tell my clients, you are actually bombing the people there with your thoughts. Yeah. And people feel frequency and they feel energy. So if you are transmitting it, even before you speak it, something inside of them has already moved into protection. And so even if they want to be closer or they want to understand, all of a sudden now, I got to survive. I have to take care of myself. So the thing I start with my clients is, what are you thinking? And are you right? I mean, is this true? I mean, before you start sending that energy out, I mean, I forget what the stat is, but somebody, the strongest personality, can walk into a space and impact that entire group of people within a very short period of time by their thoughts. So that's great if it's positive. That's interesting if it's negative.
In my sense is, you do that in a very positive way when you look in the room. That's my take. Yeah, and so I'd like to throw Jimmy Carter references into the mix. And his way of looking at it is that our words and actions let people show, through our words and actions, we show people what's in our hearts.
100%.
And that heart energy is so, so powerful. I think that's the kind of energy that we all carry and shows in different ways. I agree.
Yeah. I want to add a couple things here, if I may.
Another movie reference?
No. I can, but Bryan Cranston was the actor, by the way.
Yay! I love him.
Yeah.
It's just our brain's just not as fast as I would like it to be sometimes. Edgar, you talked about bringing the unspoken expectations into the spoken realm. It's the unspoken expectations about the relationship.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I think that's about the relationship we have with each other. And Cynthia, as you were sharing that personality in a room, right? So I'm a large human. And so, you know, my personality comes with, but as you mentioned, your labs, people don't get this from me often until they know me, but my personality is a little bit like your labs. Like I want to play. Like I have so many questions about the world, and I have so many questions about how people work and how things work that I want to play. And as you picture two dogs kind of playing and it looks like fighting, like I just with some kind of fervor and excitement, like I want to play, because I'm not where I need to be. I want to keep growing and keep learning. This is, you know, it's funny because when we do our work with organizations, and we use a lot of design thinking. And I was sharing Edgar last time we were there, I just told the group, listen, this has got to be like kindergarten. Like, don't worry about what's coming out the other side. Like, we just got to play a little bit here. And through the play, we'll get where we need to go. And it always works when they manage to do that. But so many people are so worried about, well, if I look playful and somebody else doesn't look playful, and you know, I have energy and somebody else doesn't have energy, like you get this kind of connections, not like you want them to be, because everybody gets worried. But I know when I walk into a room, like I do, I want to know things. I want to know how people work.
That's an interesting facet. Now that I think about it, because I've observed people, you in a room with a group of people who are working with them, especially early on, their cautiousness towards you. And that strikes me with some clarity now, because it's you're asking for the creative, for them to work in the realm of creativity without fear. And what is somebody going to think if I say something or if I throw a new idea out? And we all know this about brainstorming, and we've heard it all before. You know, let's be fearless in our brainstorming. But how do we, I think it's so important for us to all be able to understand, and that energy, as you said, Cynthia, that we create without saying a word. Mm-hmm. Important it is to be able to really help one another be playful and be creative and find spaces where we can work in our relationship with each other without fear.
Cynthia, you feel the energy, and the vibration is the thing that's filling my mind, but you didn't say that. What were the two things you said? They can feel the energy and they can feel the
frequency. And you're and intentional. But I want to say I have a big personality, I'm sure you've noticed. And so I can walk into a space, and I've had people tell me, you scare me. As like, I don't even know you. How did I scare you? Because one of the things when I train my coaches, we talk about brain types, you know, and we talk about how they process information and how they process interactions with other people. So, you know, introverts and people who are just really strategy people who and numbers people and stuff, and here I come, the creative, and I'm floating into the room, they're like, oh my God, who is that? And what? So I make sure that when I teach, I'm tapping into those parts of the brain for everybody so they can start to feel safe and they can process at their own rate. And they can also know that it's a safe space for them to be able to bring the ways in which their thought patterns and their needs and desires enter the space.
This is Edgar and I started to do more and more work where we're both with an organization simultaneously. And it gives a wonderful advantage because one of us gets to pay attention to that, to those other spaces. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, it's a lot on you, Cynthia, to go into a room and for you to pay attention to all of those spaces of the individuals you're working with. And we're fortunate when we get to go in together to you know, one of us gets to stand on the side for a little while and watch, and then, you know, invite that part in so that Edgar might not have to keep track of it all at the same time.
Y'all are a whole brain.
that's probably the wisest statement that anybody's ever said to the bullpen.
I don't know. I got a lot of missing parts. Sure. Yeah. So now I have a curiosity. So when you work with a group and you're trying to create that space, what does that look like? How do you extend that invitation? What does that actually look like?
Well, the first thing I do when I go into the space is I tell them safety is one of my top values. And so I want to create a space here where everybody feels safe and everybody gets a chance to communicate in the way that serves them best. And so there will be lots of different processes and stuff where sometimes I'll ask people to speak in the room, but other times they're in dyads or they're in small groups where the introverts can bring their energy. I also have people do, you know, there's a Myers-Briggs kind of thing, 16 personalities, and I have the leaders all take the test. And then I have them bring them in, and then I put them in small groups, and then we come back as a whole and we start talking about, well, you know, I'm a this and I'm a that. Oh, you're a that? Well, hi, you know, and so we start understanding that we all operate differently and we can respect the differences. And so there's also, I'm trying to think of Shirzad. Positive intelligence. And he has this saboteur's test. You know him? Uh-huh. Yeah. And he has a saboteur's test. And so when I was working with women entrepreneurs, I had them all take the saboteur's test. And it was a fascinating conversation because I think and sometimes for my coaches, we'll do emergenetics too, just so that there's some kind of bottom line that they can look at and go, oh, I'm okay the way I am. This is how I operate, and there's nothing wrong with me if Mary's this and Sue is that.
Yeah, I think we find so powerful in the work around the True Alignment system is the ability for people to see each other through their natural motivations, desires, and needs that we all share and we individually have preferences to. But also there's a lot to be said for a common language, a terminology, a shared terminology and language that we can all use, that we can lean into when we need to, and to have that to work as well. So, yeah.
Nice. So this is a question, you know, going back to your comment, Cynthia, about, you know, babies and pets. So seems to me like we know all of these things. In our soul, these things exist, and we unlearn them. And a lot of our work is rediscovering and helping people see those. I mean, I'm always the phenomena of basic things being put on top of, and then we're always constantly trying to show people those basic things again, right? Some of alignment is the aha moment of what emotional thing that I want to have met, and how do I find that in the things that I'm doing and who I am being? It's going back to the basics. I mean, this is the work that we're all doing. There's billions of dollars in this industry, but it really is, it's basic. That's one of the things that when I go to bed at night, I struggle with, because it is, you know, you can sit in the self-help section of a bookstore, you know, and there's a lot of versions of getting back to some basic tenets that you probably knew at some point.
Yeah, you know, what I tell leaders is, it's not just your mind. It's not just your intelligence. You have a body. And it's involved in that process. So one of the things I teach people in the classes is, when you're triggered, when there's something happening, what's happening in your body? Because if it's true that the body has a language, it starts telling you in advance that something's up. You know, HeartMath Institute has done all that work around around the heart communicating. But I'll just speak for myself. When my solar plexus, when my stomach constricts, I know I'm not to move. I'm not to make a decision. I'm not to force anything because there's something else that needs to be realized or understood. You know, same with my heart. If my heart's constricted, then I know I'm not in my loving. You know, I'm in my fear. And so I think we forget because we try to go from our necks up to the top of our heads and figure everything out and understand everything and operate from there. When you're a holistic being, and so is everybody else, and frequency transmits.
Yeah, very much so, very much so. Yeah, and learning to pay attention to that, because we all felt it as children.
100%.
And then we got sophisticated enough to manage that fear and manage that aspect of it. But we've got a few minutes that, and if I may, Cynthia, just for those listening and also our own curiosity. So what are you up to these days, and what are you looking forward to in the near future?
Well, I'm duplicating myself with my coaches, because if I want to leave a legacy, then I just can't be the only thing operating in this field. And so I'm training some of my best coaches to be me, as it were, so that I can train more people and I can be in more places. So that I'm excited about that. I mean, I've got some wonderful coaches. I've been invited into more government work. And when I get past the paperwork and all that crazy stuff that it required, because I have a spiritual background and I've done a lot of work with spiritual communities, at one point I said to the universe, I want to stop teaching to the choir. Mm-hmm. I want to talk to the people who need it the most. And so I feel like that's what's been opening for me, that I get to do more of that. And then my programs and stuff, my coaches can take and do some other things. So I'm excited about that. I know I'm supposed to write another book and I've been avoiding it. So that'll be there at some point.
Yeah, he's pointing his finger at me. Yeah. I've got four I've got four on the pile right now. So yeah. Thank you for joining us today. What a wonderful conversation and an insightful one. Thanks.
Yeah. I'm so happy to have been here. You guys are great.
You make me smile.
Very kind.
Here and here. Thank you.
Yeah. So thank you. This is a True Alignment podcast. And if you want to reach out and communicate, all you've got to do is send us a note at info@truealignment.com. And as I mentioned right at the outset, we will respond as timely as we possibly can. So a reminder to you all to be well and to live aligned. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time around on True Alignment. I'm Edgar Papke.
I'm Ken Sagner. Have a good week, everybody.
Live aligned.